How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunchberries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. He's John Littlefoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunchberry.
No!
No one steals my Crunchberries.
I think you mean my Crunchberries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
From pit lane to podium, the Las Vegas Grand Prix is providing fans a race day experience at the speed they deserve. With the help of T-Mobile for Business, our 5G advanced network solutions are powering race day operations with event-wide connectivity. From streamlined gate entry to an immersive app, giving fans blazing fast access to the sport they love. This is accelerating innovation. This is the Las Vegas Grand Prix with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
Hey parents, Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Let's talk about state and local government and how they're responding to the new cybersecurity initiatives. John Zanni gives insights. This is a bonus episode of the Business of Tech. John, tell me a little bit about what your role is at Acronis.
Okay, so I'm at Acronis SES, and what we do, I run the company, and what we do is we specifically provide cyber protection services to the U.S. public sector. So that's state and local government, federal government, nonprofit education, and healthcare. So our job is to protect all those assets and data to make sure the bad actors don't get to it.
Gotcha. Makes sense. So the interesting reason that we wanted to talk today was you were interested in talking a little bit about the different levels of engagement. When I talk a lot about cybersecurity on the show, I've been talking a lot about federal engagement. But you think that there's a lot more action at the SLED level, that state, local government, and education level. Tell me why you think there's so much action at that level right now.
Yeah, it's a great point, and I appreciate you asking me that. So we all know the federal government is a target of attack from bad actors, especially certain nation states. What a lot of these cities and states don't understand, and small hospitals and even nonprofits, is that because of the way the bad actors go after these entities with ransomware, for example, or malware, or now what they call killware, it's done in a programmatic way, which means there's really little cost for them to go after thousands or tens of thousands of entities. And as long as they succeed in a number of them, even if they don't get a lot of money per agency or per group, it ends up being a significant source of revenue for them. And I use that term because they do run it like a business, right? They look at return on investment. And the other advantage is in a lot of these cases, the infrastructure is not up to date. You might have a part-time IT person managing that infrastructure for a local small city. And so they're just a prime target of getting thousands or tens of thousands of dollars over and over again instead instead of trying to go for the big $10 million or $50 million payout.
Well, they look a lot like small businesses, really, is what they end up looking like, right?
Exactly. Except for more complex, right? Because you take the state of Arizona, for example, it's like it is a federated system. So some of the budgets, city budgets, come from the state. Some of it they have to supply themselves. School districts are the same. Take a K-12 school district, and they have other items that they need to assign those budgets to, for example, Omicron, right?
Right. So when you're working with these, how much are you finding that these organizations try and do it themselves with like an internal IT department? And how much are they doing it with external contractors and vendors?
It's a mix. It really just depends who you talk to. And what I'm seeing is the smaller the city, the smaller the entity, it seems like more that they just have a trusted IT provider that might be supporting multiple 3,000 to 5,000 person cities or 50 doctor's offices, right? And they don't understand that there are tools out there that could help them be much more effective, especially through managed service providers that provide full IT services that'll help them be protected.
Okay. So I want to get into a couple of specifics of things that we're seeing happen right now. There's been a lot of talk around certifications for cybersecurity solutions like FIPS, you know, 140-2. As I'm a bit of a lay person on this one, when I read that, I go, well, that says federal in the name. How much of it is related to this space? What size providers and SLED need to be thinking about certifications like FIPS 140-2?
So the way to think about it is when I was in the early 90s, before I was in tech, go to buy a piece of technology for my home, whether it was a router or some software. You know, I would buy when it said, you know, certified for Windows. At that time, Windows was the big thing, because I knew if it had that stamp, it would just, it would work and it'd be easier to work. Well, this is the same thing. I don't recommend anybody to go and get FIPS certified solution or get certified themselves, because it's quite involved. It takes 18 to 24 months, a lot of money. But what they need to do is wherever they're getting their technology, their IT technology, whether it is storage, backup and recovery, anti-ransomware, you need to ask them what certifications they have. If it is FIPS 140-2 certified, then it has government-grade encryption, both at rest and in transport. And so it allows you to feel good that someone's not just giving you a marketing spiel, but they actually got that certification. And it's not just FIPS, right? It's HIPAA, it's CJIS, it's NIST 800-171. We could take 2 hours if I went through every control there. But if you are NIST certified, then you at least know that somebody audited the system and said, well, these guys are doing everything they can to make sure your data is protected.
Okay. So I want to pick on one in particular because I want to get your take on it. And that's the Cybersecurity Maturity Model Certification, or CMMC.
Correct.
This is one where, you know, it's become a mandate, you know, at some level, and we're seeing more of that. But my analyst take on this is I keep seeing two sides to this. There's one side that says CMMC is a great framework and it's working really well to help give us some insights. And then I have other experts that are telling me, well, with 2.0, they've actually kind of neutered it a little bit. There's a lot more self-assessment to it, that it's a lot less helpful. How does, if I'm putting, standing in for the customer in a way with my level of analysis to it, how do I interpret this and how do you look at CMMC?
So just a little context in CMMC. It has five levels, and I know they're talking about changing it to three levels. Yeah. Depending on the level of cyber security you need to have, where level one is just basic security, similar to at your home, I assume you lock your door at night and close your windows before you go to bed. Then there's another set of levels above that, which is really for sensitive data, but not not classified or secret or top secret data. And then there's the levels for data that just cannot get into bad actors' hands. And what they did is they've actually done a pretty good job of separating the controls you need and what you need to do to protect that data tied to its sensitivity. Unfortunately, with version 1.0, there were 171 controls in total over 17 domains, and it became cost prohibitive for a small business to become CMMC certified. On top of that, there were a small number of auditors, which means the prices were ridiculously high, and there were requirements that just made it non-viable. So in comes 2.0, which is to try to get this compromise where if I'm a, you know, 3-person, 5-person shop, maybe even 20 people, that I can still meet the criteria that allows the U.S. government to buy from me without having to essentially invest millions of dollars for what could be, you know, $1 million a year business or $2 million a year business and getting access to that technology. So I think we have a few more years of finding that right balance, and that's why you're seeing this. But overall, the principle and what they want to accomplish, I think, is good and frankly, super important.
Okay, so you think that your take on it is that 2.0 is heading in the right direction tangentially?
Correct, it is. It might have overcompensated. The other part it doesn't do, which we'll have to see how that plays out, is one of the ways you could meet those requirements is through partnering with other technology providers, right? So, for example, if you use a provider that already has FIPS 140-2 storage, since you brought up FIPS, that meets a lot of the controls and the requirements, and you don't have to go implement it yourself.
Okay.
I see businesses coming up like virtual CIOs, right? So if you can't afford a few $100,000 a year for a CIO, you can now use a service that costs you much less that helps you provide that those capabilities that you would need. Also, it depends what you supply, right? If you're supplying a little widget that does something where the risk of it being an entry point for a bad actor is pretty low, that's just different than if you're providing some network protocol, right, which could be hacked.
Gotcha. That makes some sense. So I've been talking a lot on the show about the infrastructure bill and the investments that the federal government is making to try and beef up security. What are you seeing, since you work directly with a lot of the customers, what are you seeing as the impacts of that kind of short term now with some of that funding now that it's in play at least? What are you seeing as the impact?
Correct. So the short term is a recognition by the federal government that SLED is super important and a point of attack by the bad actor, right? The bill designates over $1 billion over the next 4 years to state, local, tribal, and territorial entities, right? Another $250 million for rural areas. That's absolutely fantastic. It's money that's there for those guys to really update their systems, hire some people to put in place the automation so that they can be protected. The challenge with the bill, when I talk to some of these smaller cities or entities, is they have no idea how to get the money,
okay. Right?
So what's not clear yet is, what do I need to do to actually qualify for that grant? That I don't go and put in all this infrastructure and protect myself, and then the federal government says, oops, you didn't do this one thing, and so we're not going to give you any money, right? So there's work there to do. And we saw this with COVID, right, and the grants around COVID, where there was money left on the table because people just didn't know how to go after it. The small business bill, right? And so that's where the work lies, is how do you get access to that money? And then once you do, then you find some IT providers that can help you really protect yourself.
Gotcha. Or I could also say that this is an opportunity for the IT providers to dig in and figure that out and help customers navigate it, right?
Correct. Yes. It's a sorry to interrupt you, but a very, very fair point. It's just difficult, even for us as an IT provider. I'd love to have a blog that says, here are the 10 steps you need to do to get your fair share of the money. It's just not very well defined. And, you know, for better or for worse, we're in a country where if I make promises and then they don't get the money, I could get sued for owing them that money, right? So you have to navigate carefully. So but it's there.
Yeah, so what are we looking for then in terms of guideposts or direction to help navigate that? Particularly if we think, I always cite the fact that, you know, around 90% or more of all provider IT services providers are less than $5 million in revenue. This seems like a great area to be looking at, but now we've just sort of warned it's hard. How do they start looking at navigating this?
So my experience in dealing with these SLED entities is most all of them already have their trusted vendors, right, and IT providers. And if they need to be on certain programs, they're already on the program. So if I was one of those vendors or IT providers, I'd go to my customer and say, look, there's this money here. Let's work together to figure out how to go get it. And I know it's not a silver bullet. It's not magical, but it's what you need to do and say, look, I can build out a program or a solution for you that'll be within the constraints of the cost, but we need to work together to figure out what you need to do to actually get those funds and when you would get it. And then it's about navigating the system, right? And it takes time, but the ones who put in the effort will get access to amazing amount of funding, right? And really be protected.
Well, if it was easy and everyone was doing it, it'd be a commodity, right?
Right, exactly.
So we don't like commodity business. We like hard businesses.
Right. But the good news is the technology's there. It's really just about getting the funding.
Okay, got it. So I want to get the last sort of question area I wanted to go on with you is I want a little bit of predictions from you. So I'm trying to get a feel from various experts on their take on the landscape. If I go at a really, really high level, you know, you've got groups like the big analysts that are saying, you know, a G20 nation is going to respond to a cyber incident in a physical way by 2024. So for me, that points to like this problem is going to get worse, security in general, almost before it gets better. What's your take on the security landscape? Are we going to get better this year? Is it going to continue to get worse? More of the same? What's your take?
I think it will get worse and better at the same time. And what I mean by that is you have to understand advanced technology has really been commoditized. You can go to Microsoft Azure or Amazon AWS and get access to AI technology compute services, which an individual could not do in the past. So the bad actors attacking these systems have access, easy, low-cost access to pretty advanced technology, which means that it's going to get worse. At the same time, there are more and more sophisticated tools like ours, and we're not the only one in the market, that can combat these bad actors. And now, through the infrastructure bill, we see there's funding from the government to help protect yourself. So I think what you're going to see is those that really are proactive to protecting themselves, it'll get better. Those who think they can wait another year or two are going to find themselves attacked and having, you know, worst case scenario to pay a lot of money, best case scenario be down for days or weeks at a time, which, you know, lost in productivity is still lost in money. Right.
Right. So it's interesting to me that you said that, and I'm going to follow up there. Is the worst case scenario is downtime. Do you think that there's reputational damage or not when it comes to these breaches now? Or are they so commonplace that it just doesn't matter anymore?
Oh, absolutely. There's reputational damage. What you don't see, unless you're really paying attention, and in many cases, there are, let's just say, employees in the technology sector that disappear after there's been a breach. I don't know. It's sort of weird. Being attacked and telling people about it is sort of like getting one of those embarrassing diseases that you just don't want anybody to know and you want it to go away. And so what happens is that they, of course, you know, spent a lot of money getting a forensics team to come, bring them back up. A lot of people don't realize that it's not like even if you pay the ransom, you're up an hour later. Bringing systems back online is hard and complex. And then the leadership will change the organization because someone screwed up, but they won't talk about it because they're embarrassed. And there is legislation, by the way, going through government, both federal and some states, to force reporting so that this problem, there'll be more awareness around this problem and even more funding, which I expect.
Gotcha. Well, that's a good series of predictions to end on. John, I appreciate your time today.
Thanks for listening to this bonus episode of The Business of Tech. I'll talk to you again tomorrow. The Business of Tech is written and produced by me, Dave Sobel. Like the content? Support the show at patreon.com/MSPradio. Want to reach our listeners? MSPradio.com/engage.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. He's John LeFoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last crunch berry.
No!
No one steals my crunch berries.
I think you mean my crunch berries. Choose your own crunch venture with Cap'n Crunch.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.
Hey, parents. Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity, set up chores, and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.